Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Rikas Reeders from PSG Wealth. Remsach, don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's been a rocky couple of days. If you are watching ticker to ticker, Gary, what's news today on the local front?
Oh, news today on the local front. So I think we're really still dealing with just the aftermath of that CPI number. So, I mean, we've had, all sorts of speeches and that over the last little bit. But it's just overshadowed by the idea that, that inflation isn't under control. And everyone, I think at the moment is just trying to count down, the next 6 days, to see what the Fed does. And, at the moment, it used to be maybe they'll come down to 50 basis points and then it's pretty certain it's going to be 75. I was just having a look at the FedWatch tool, yep. And it's now there's a 22% chance priced in for a 1% increase in the US. And I think, that's just spooking markets at the moment. Just in other news, we've got, obviously the talks between Russia and China, and they seem to be quite friendly. But at the same time, it looks like the war in Ukraine is going to go on for the foreseeable future. So a little bit of a tick up in oil prices on the back of that. And, all the analyst notes I read this morning, very constructive on a higher oil price.
Yeah, that FedWatch tool is broken because it said next year, towards the tail end of next year, there's going to be reduction of interest rates. And, it keeps changing every day. So. Exactly. That's my issue with those things. Rikas, your view now currently on where we're sitting in terms of global markets. I mean, we had that one down day. I think it was on Tuesday where it was the worst day in markets after those CPI numbers that Gary was referring to. US markets were down about 5% there. And yesterday, a nice bounce back. Today, I see we're a bit flat. It's a bias in the green.
Yeah, I think what stopped the market from going down further was certainly banking shares on the back of First Rand's results. And then Rand hedges with the Rand sitting at 17.56 to the dollar. That was also the biggest mover in the top 40. But as you and Gary have said, it's CPI and the States. And the thing with the Fed market tool is that, there's never a 50-50 chance where they're going to hike by 75 or 100, or one basis points. What it does do is give you an indication of what sentiment is. So as that, 20% chance of a 1% move up to 30 or 40% or 35%, the problem it gives the Fed is that if they then only hike by 75 basis points, that might seem too dovish, and that means that markets go up, and that's the last thing the Fed wants. So they're almost forced by that opinion poll to be in line with the market, if that's not too complicated.
Yeah, that's one hell of a job to have. It's complicated, for your job to be driven by consensus opinion, which is, I don't want that on my back. Yeah. Let's jump into our questions here. We'll start with Twitter. We've got Miss Lulama here who says, what's happening at Mustek? Why is the share price dipping? I mean, I know you look at this one, Rikas.
I do. Well, results came out, 10 or so drop in operating earnings. Their main, I won't call it a problem, but the thing that got them in the last 6 months after the previous two or three six-month terms of excellent growth is that they've overstocked. They're not the only people that that have done that. For example, they mentioned that their entry-level notebooks, they've got too many of them. So their working capital has got a bit haywire. Now, they, together with a lot of other companies, have that, just in case we have another problem as far as supplies are concerned, we better stock up. And that creates a whiplash effect as far as logistics and also what you've got in your in your back house, so to speak. So you're overstocked, you spend a lot of money, now you must get rid of it. So they're quite sanguine about the future. They still think there's enough growth in the market to take care of that in the short term, and I tend to agree with that. I think the other pretty positive is that the stock they've got at the moment was probably bought at a rand that was, you know, around 50 or whatever lower than against the dollar as compared to what it is at the moment. So they'll make a pretty margin on that once they get rid of it. But longer term, I still think it's really ridiculously undervalued considering their track record, first of all. And, you know, selling hardware might not be the next best thing, but it's not bad if you can do it the way they've been doing it.
Yeah. Anything to add there, Gary, on Mustek?
No, not really. I don't cover Mustek, so I'll leave it to Rickus to comment on that one.
Oh, okay. Do you cover Steph stocks?
We have Steph stocks either. These are crazy questions. I think Rickus has been watching it. I mean, Steph stocks. I mean, looking at Steph stocks. I mean, it's down massively over the last 5 years, but it has had a little bit of a rally in the last, couple of months. So I think Rickus is going to take us through Steph stocks as well.
Yeah, well, I think the actual question from, you know, Power Couple 1802 says, could the panelists provide insights into the business?
Well, they're sitting with a massive amount of debt. They still have a court case hanging as far as collusion and whatever is concerned. The one thing that they are doing is reducing debt. About 2 or 3 days ago, they announced the sale of some of their African assets, so that helps in reducing that debt. But otherwise, like any single construction company in South Africa, they are they are tied to what's going to happen with construction and capital spend in South Africa. And if you take a look at what PPC is saying about local cement sales, that's still a mirage on the horizon. It's not here yet.
Yo, okay, I remember this stock when it was, you know, a lot higher than that. You could add a couple zeros there. So, yeah. Do you follow MC Mining and Salungano, Gary? Which one do you actually follow? What do you follow? So we could ask more questions.
These are not companies that I follow. They unfortunately, they're outside our universe, the size of the stock.
Okay, here's something for you. Here's something that I know you have a clue. Mr. Financial Fitness says, which of the following would be the best long-term bet between Richemont, LVMH, Hermes, and Kering? So this is, French luxury companies, you know, with producing goods in Switzerland, France, Italy, and across the world, and obviously selling it to the West and Southeast Asia as some of their top, customers. So your thoughts, Gary? It'll fix itself, don't worry.
Yeah, looking at it, I seem to have gone a little bit blurry. So my thoughts are you should probably stick with a local counter. You've got an incredible luxury good because you've got an incredibly credible luxury goods retailer on our local market. And there's, use your exchange control allowance to go overseas. So sure, something like LVMH is a lot bigger. If you're looking for European exposure, it's not really European exposure. It's just really, I suppose, where it's domiciled. I mean, LVMH works across the entire globe. It is, you know, significantly larger than something like Richemont. But if you look at it on a forward earnings terms, Richemont is a lot cheaper than LVMH. So you're looking at, one-year EPS, you're looking at about, call it low 18 on Richemont, whereas LVMH is sitting on almost 22 on a forward 1 year EPS forecast. If you look at just the valuations of the companies, Richemont comes out a lot lower. So in luxury goods, the whole sector is pretty decent, just because obviously you've got more resilient kind of upper end consumers. So when you go into a world that is, you know, a lot more challenging, you typically find that lower income consumers are more affected. So I do think there is a sense of stability here. And if you look at it, LVMH down around 9% for the year, Richemont down around 22%. So giving you, I think, a slightly better entry point at the moment.
Yes, I mean, you've said very bullish case for, you know, luxury goods manufacturers in general, but you know, the story that I'm hearing on the streets is that a lot of people during COVID lockdowns couldn't spend their money on experiences. So what they did was spend most of their money on actual, luxury items. There was sort of a substitution effect happening here from one good to the next. And obviously we saw their share prices performing exceptionally well, and the base, for growth has become much higher. And now, the world is opening up. Things are seeming to be, coming along quite nicely, and people are traveling again. So the substitute is happening in reverse. People are going back to being, global citizens. They're traveling a lot. They're going to those destinations that they've always wished to go to. And even though they might still be spending on jewelry and watches and I don't know what they sell these days, crocodile skin handbags, if that's your thing, Gary or you, Rickus, it's just not going to be enough in terms of growth. It's not going to be the type of growth you saw in the past 2 years. And as a result, maybe the PEs of North to 20 for all of these businesses is a little bit too steep.
It's a good point, but I think also just remember that with the opening up of travel, Richemont is particularly reliant on those sales through airports, specifically to Asian consumers as well. So I don't know, you look at something like the Middle East and, the kind of windfall profits, a little bit more spending happening in the super upper end segment, the ultimate luxury goods, which are not just small substitutes. You're not just swapping, maybe I'll travel this year, or maybe I'll buy a Louis Vuitton handbag or a Mont Blanc pen. These are kind of the ultra wealthy that it's maybe a different class of player. You're spending multiple times what someone else would spend on a holiday on a single item.
Yeah, and Rickus, anything to add there with luxury goods?
No, Gary, at my point exactly. A Cartier watch not bought by a couple going from Florida on a boat cruise. We are talking about super rich wealthy people. Obviously, there is a problem in China because the super rich, wealthy people are getting a little bit less so. That doesn't mean that travel won't happen. I'm quite sure that will have an effect on Richemont. So I don't say the whole sector is ripe for the picking. You're right, valuations are high. But if we are talking about the sector, then Richemont, with its really exclusive range of product, is probably a better hiding place than a more super high to a lower high company like Louis Vuitton, for example. So if I had to choose, I'll stay with Richemont rather than desperately go out and buy it, for example.
Okay. So the YNAP and the failed activist bid on Richemont, those don't give you a headache, Rickus?
Say again.
The YNAP, issue.
That's I won't call it history, but it's done. It's unknown. What we don't know is what's going to happen with demand, and the wind is from the back as far as that's concerned. Or at least you're not heading into difficulties. You're probably cruising out of it.
We've got more questions. I'll start with this one from Sundir on email. It says, evening, why did Standard Bank fall more than other banks today? And is it a buy at these levels, for a 3 to 5 year outlook, Rickus?
Well, they didn't fall today. They fell yesterday because they went ex-dividend. So that explains Standard Bank. Is it a buy? I think together with most of the banking sector, offering good value at the moment. You can go and pick and choose whether you prefer FirstRand to NetBank. They've all got their different drivers, if I can call it that. As I said, price decline, I think, is purely dividend as to prospect for both Standard Bank and the others, except maybe for Capitec. Not a bad place to be.
So you bullish on SA Inc. Financial Services. Interesting. Gary, any thoughts on Standard Bank or maybe the banking sector in general and your picks maybe in that area locally?
Yeah, I was looking at Standard Bank the other day, and I mean, it's something that we don't hold in portfolios. You know, Standard Bank is the biggest bank by assets, but First Rand is the biggest bank by market cap, and we hold First Rand in portfolios. But there's absolutely, as Rikke says, there's nothing wrong with holding Standard Bank instead. It's also a significant weight in the index. So if you are an index tracking investor, you know, you've probably already got decent exposure to it. You know, there's always been the issue that Standard Bank has some legacy systems. It's a very complex, it's a very large bank, and that has kind of hindered it in the past. But you know, all of our banks are just on such low multiples at the moment. I mean, you know, based on last 12 month numbers, Standard Bank trading at a 7.5 PE on a 7% historic dividend yield. So it's a good divvy player. You know, I think all the banks are going to get they are obviously constrained by our GDP growth, and if you're buying a bank, or at least a South African bank, with the hope that we're suddenly going to be able to grow at, you know, 4, 5, or 6%, I think that's very, very unreasonable. We have, you know, structural constraints around power that just isn't going to allow that. But you know, if you take that into account, I think that's already factored into the price of our banks, and they're very well capitalized. They're great institutions at very, very cheap prices, and obviously, you know, the rising interest rate environment does help them through the endowment effect. You don't want it to rise too much too quickly, that it really kills growth and sends us into a recession, which will obviously be bad for the banks. But you know, Rikus was talking about a hiding spot in the market earlier, and I think the South African banking sector, certainly in the local market, is one of those hiding spots. And I think the big four, it would probably be Nedbank, Standard Bank, and First Rand that I'd be looking at. Absa, maybe I'm a little bit more circumspect. Capitec has had an incredible run over the last couple of years, and that I think maybe a little bit aggressively priced for me at the moment, especially given their client base and, looking at, the trading statement that came out as well for Capitec. I think there is a worry in the market that there are going to be, you know, increased credit impairments. And I think maybe the health of their consumer is not quite what the market was hoping, because it really is priced for perfection. And then Investec, and again, it kind of comes down to the debate between, backing the more wealthy clients or backing the mass market. And I think Investec is interesting, but I'd probably rather go with the ex-asset manager, something like 91. So that's kind of my rundown of the financial services sector.
Yeah, it's a nice rundown. I like that. Thank you very much, Gary. We have a question on the SMS line which says, is Santova a share for future growth? Are you still looking at Santova there, Rikus?
Yeah, I am. I'm not sure what is going to happen for the next 6 months, 12 months in their business, which is really managing freight, and not the physical moving of stuff, but being the broker between, your shippers and your suppliers. That whole market, in other words, your whole, if you just take a look at what's happening with freight rates, that's come down a lot over the past 6 months. So even though they take a percentage of the value of whatever is being shipped, I can't see them having the kind of year they had over the past 2 years, for example, apart from the fact that your traffic in Europe has already, because of the drought, and will probably even more decline in the next 6 months as winter sets in, as factories are forced to slow down or close at least.
Yeah.
There's a lot of headwind as far as, specifically in Europe, the moving of goods are concerned, both because of power and, as I said, literally because of a drought, because the rivers are too shallow for a barge to move on.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of repenting happening in Europe, to say the least, this winter. Gary, I want to hear your thoughts on the valuation of Santova. It's been one of the best performers in the JSE for the past 2 years. And I mean, one has to question whether these guys can continue growing at this rate, given the current valuation of the business.
Well, the valuation isn't too stretched. I've got to be honest. So you're looking at it. You know, if you're looking at a historic PE and you're trading on a five, and I think you know it's a 1 billion rand company. This is a small cap. Again, it's kind of going to have liquidity problems for big players going in and out of it. But for private clients or individuals, I mean, it does potentially make an attractive play. And you know, I think what we've seen is that there's you know in a falling market like this, there's real opportunity in the small and mid cap sector because it isn't being, you know, just sold off, you know, the baby's not being tossed out of the bathwater, if you want to put it that way. It's, you know, the big index players are, you know, that are selling down out of the South African market, you know, sometimes don't affect the lower market cap counters. So I think there is opportunity in the sector. And what we have seen is obviously the raft of delistings on the JSE as well. So the idea that that you go into the kind of the smaller mid-cap sector with a view that you could potentially get a, you know, someone coming and buying out the business is, you know, and delisting it and paying you some sort of premium, which we've seen all over the place, even in the bigger counter, something like Massmart. So, you know, it could be attractive. You know, to Rikus's point, it has run very, very hard this year. You know, year to date, up around 46%. It's been
incredible.
You know, a very, very strong performer, but not particularly expensive at this stage.
Okay, you still think maybe this horse got some legs here. We have a question from Tumelo Rampele, who's asking us about Labatt, and saying that they got the green light, and obviously they've been promising us being the potential investors and investors, you know, a great story. But what does this mean now? Because I'm guessing Dumelo holds Labatt and she has not seen, or he has not seen, the type of returns that has been, you know, expected, at least, you know, so to say. Rikus? Cannabis? Well, are you bullish on cannabis in South Africa?
Well, how high can it go? No. there's a reason they call it weed. You know, it's it's not very difficult to produce your base product. So your margin or your selling point lies in the refining, how much you can do of it. So it's a volume business, and then the quality of your product. Nothing is new as far as that's concerned. What is new that your marketplace has been opened with, you know, deregulation, whether it be in America or over here. So all of a sudden, there's a lot of players in this market. What gives you the edge? It's going to be volume. It's and quality. And how many other companies worldwide is doing exactly the same thing that Labatt is doing? Of course, I can be completely wrong because I know absolutely nothing about the processes and things like that. But that's just my thoughts when something like this comes to market.
Yeah, as a former factory worker or manufacturer, so to say, I can tell you that the tobacco guys could do this job faster, easier, and quicker than, you know, Labatt would ever dream of. If there was, you know, potential to make money, they would make it faster than them. And as a result, I don't know, I want to shut this thing down very quickly. But that's just me and my lack of optimism in the whole sector as a whole. So fortunately for us, I have to take our stock picks for the evening. I'll start with you, Gary.
I'm going to stay. Well, we've only talked about tiny little companies, so I'm going to stay in the small cap space. I'm going to go with Libstar, which is one that I think you know is potentially a very attractive buy. So it's closed the day today at R5.90. We've got a target price of around R7.50 on it, which is a decent upside. You never know; you might get a total buyout in the years to come. When I say it's a fairly new listing, it listed in May 2018. And since then, the market hasn't liked it. But they had a management change this week. They announced, obviously, Andreas van Rensburg was stepping down, and it's going to be Charles de Villiers taking over. So he's a very young CEO, potentially a little bit inexperienced, but he was the former CFO, and he's going to be backed by Cornel Ludovics, who's very experienced, comes out of their Lancewood business. business. And I think, you know, the strategy that they kind of have highlighted going forward is that they're going to, you know, double down on their good businesses and shut down their bad businesses. And that's kind of what you want in this environment. They've managed to maintain their margins, even though they are obviously in a difficult space where, you know, labor, energy, packaging, raw materials are all getting a lot more expensive. But, you know, like I said, I think it's incredibly cheap at this stage. So worth buying.
It's still down 50% from listing. And I've heard that story. I've been to about two of their presentation, also talking a big story. Share price says otherwise. I guess it hasn't been very easy for FMCGs in SA, but we need to move on to Rikus's pick now. Rikus?
It's something I've had before. The price has gone quite parabolic. Not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's got more to run. It's the Grishmals Energy Fund who involve in a, and the fund is invested in a number of UK alternative energy providers in the form of battery storage. That battery storage is used when you've got a failure as far as, for example, gas generation is concerned. If, you know, if you've got stormy weather, the way the European energy market is and power generation is heading for the next 6 months, I think that kind of product is going to be in very high demand. They'll be able to set the price because they are literally, you know, your last resort when you've got a shortage like that. So I think they'll be pumping money at least for the next 6 months, specifically as we head into the European winter, specifically as Germany basically shuts down. It's going, you know, the marginal cost of whatever energy you need.
Yeah.
They won't run out of it, but those prices are going to be very, very high.
So Rikus is going with Gresham House Grid. That's the share code listed in the London Stock Exchange because winter is coming. And I hope there are no more plot twists from Europe, the same that we've seen on House of Dragons here. And Gary is going with a small cap, Lipster. I have to go back and dust off my valuations there. Interesting company. Thank you very much, gents. Thanks to my guests, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Rikus Reeders from PSG Wealth Remsach. Do join Zinati for the Friday edition of Stockwatch. Send those questions during the day via SMS to 4392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. The show airs live at 19:30. Have a good evening and have a good weekend.